Shopify helps you sell at every stage of your business. Like that, let's put it online and see what happens stage.
And the site is live.
That we opened a store and need a fast checkout stage.
Thanks, you're all set.
That count it up and ship it around the globe stage.
This one's going to Thailand.
And that, wait, did we just hit 1 million orders stage? Whatever your stage, businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/listen.
Is the crab still at work in the dark? I went cold when I read in Lance Armstrong's book that his brain tumors were necrotic. Necrotic means dead. If they'd been lively and aggressive, he says, they could have gone on to carry him off. Avid is the word they use about mine. Avid means eager, greedy. I think voracious. I don't like the sound of a voracious crab. Not one bit.
Come on, come on. And say, excellent. And stick your tongue out, and move it to the left side here.
Well, it all began in the cold new year of 2005. I had a wisdom tooth that crowded the lower right-hand corner of my mouth, and I started to chew my cheek in my sleep.
January 2005. The wisdom tooth was taken out. I thought that was that.
But months later, I developed a sore in that cheek, like a mouth ulcer. It began to spread, changed colour.
March 2006. I go to my GP. She makes an appointment for me at the maxillofacial clinic at St. James's Hospital. I've never heard of a maxillofacial clinic before.
St. James's Hospital.
They specialise in treating diseases of the mouth, face and neck.
Typically, it's not as bad today as it has been for the last week. You know the way you bring your kids to the doctor and as soon as they get to the waiting room, they get down and play?
At the clinic in St. James's, I'm shown into a room like a dentist's office. I explain that this is all a mistake.
It's getting calmer out there, Chris. Getting quieter, thank God.
What time do you finish?
Whenever the last person goes.
The swelling in my cheek has gone down a little. I'm sorry for wasting their time.
Move your tongue over to the side here, towards me. Slowly.
The consultant checks my mouth.
And move your tongue away from me. That's slowly. And I need you to open your mouth just a
at
little
first,
bit more.
At first, he says what other people have said.
What I'm doing, looking down the back of your mouth here.
Looks like a trauma. I've probably been chewing my own cheek.
Yeah. Great. Now, go to close your teeth again together. That's where it's sore, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm forward with.
Just about there. Oops, that's a bit of.
He looks again. He decides to do a biopsy straight away.
On the way home, I nearly forget to get off the dart. I'm staring so hard at the sunshine, the sea, school kids pulling off their jumpers in the heat, daffodils.
I was 48 when all this happened, the age my father was when he died. The year I turned 33, the age when my sister Lynn died of breast cancer, I found a lump in my own breast, which mysteriously vanished when I turned 34.
April 6. The pain in my cheek throbs and swells like a musical note. It flowers, a dark bloom with thorns. It's a filter, a veil of color. When the wave rises and falls, the fall has a sorrowful note to it, where some part of the chorus feels sympathy for the organism, for its frailty.
Of April. The doctor who calls me into the consulting room at St. James's wasn't there when they did the biopsy. While we wait for the lab to fax my results, he grills me about writing, an occupation he seems to find not only pointless, but incomprehensible. There's a problem with the fax machine, but at last we hit it lucky with a different number. The nurse carries in a sheet of paper. The doctor studies this for a while, then starts to make notes in my file. Well, I ask, what does it say? For the first time, this doctor looks uncertain. He gets on the phone, trying to track down a person who will tell me the contents of a document which he holds in his hand, inches away from me. Can I see? I ask. What? Let me see. He hands over the sheet of paper. Invasive, non-differentiated squamous cell carcinoma. Carcinoma means cancer.
I had to be admitted straight away. I had to get into the system to have more tests. It was too sudden. I was unprepared.
Ring 11 o'clock, and then the first let you know about bed.
The process took over. I didn't even feel sick, but I was given a bed, filled out forms, rang my husband who was working in London. Then I was lying in a ward, the youngest person there by decades.
The girls come in, all three of them.
I was surrounded by sick people and old people, wondering what to say to my three daughters.
Zita has brought her five-year-old son, Ryan. His brown eyes are steady as he takes in the hospital, the people.
I remember that the thought of breaking this news to them terrified me.
Simon, my husband, takes Ryan outside.
It was one thing to think, I have cancer.
I begin to circle around the subject. It's still very early. Is it cancer? Nessa interrupts.
I wasn't sure I'd be able to say it out loud.
Yes. April 14th. The morning crawls along and then there's a sudden surge of activity. Rounds, tests, samples. A tall Italian doctor with long hair glides into the ward for rounds. His accent and manner are enticing. The ward freshens up, becomes more feminine while he's there. He flirts unashamedly with the older women that he's here to see. They blush and smile long after he's gone. He's lovely, says one wistfully looking at the door. And look at the state of me. 19th of April. That I have cancer is known by everyone. Taken for granted, material, obvious. The Max Fax team comes in, forms a solemn group around the end of the bed. Professor Starson doesn't smile when he describes what they plan to do. And that scares me as much as anything. How are your three babies doing? They will have to operate to remove the tumour.
Let's have a little look.
My lower jaw will go with it. What will it be like to have half a face?
April.
Before they do the big operation, they'll insert a feeding tube called a peg.
They want me to swallow a
stomach.
Tube under sedation.
It will be like a second navel. I'll be fed artificially for weeks, maybe months.
Make a second belly button so I can be fed artificially for months.
This tube has a light on the end of it.
They will feed the peg tube from the surface to the inside of my mouth.
A surgeon appears, gowned and scrubbed.
Tells me how good Professor Stassen is.
I'm sorry for you, he says. You've a battle ahead of you.
The tube I have to swallow is fatter and harder than I expected. Surgeon pushes.
I swallow.
He pushes again. I gag and swallow. He pushes, and it's in. Hard and fast.
Yeah, and I wasn't expecting that, because when it was explained to me, it was all, this is a doddle, you know, it's a bit like having a tooth out. You get the tube put in, and then you'd be okay. So I was just shocked. At last, I began to feel like a patient. I didn't feel ill when I was admitted, but after they inserted the peg, I knew that I was. I moved around like an elderly person, shuffling and sore, holding onto my stomach. I was the only one who seemed to notice this sudden shift from strength to fragility, as if I was supposed to take the operation in my stride. We live on the side of a hill, so you have to go down a flight of concrete steps to get to our front door.
22nd of April.
They were pretty precarious, and at that stage we didn't have a handrail or anything. And I can remember thinking we had been meaning for a long time to put up some kind of a rail there, because, you know, when you have older people coming to see you or whatever, you just think, oh, it wouldn't be great if somebody slipped there. But it was the first time that I found them difficult myself. I wasn't surprised that they let me out because they had told me I could go. I was surprised by how awful I felt and how sore I was. And really moving was difficult, you know. I had to hold on to the tube to support the weight, otherwise it dragged down out of my stomach.
I go upstairs to our attic bedroom with a bag of bandages and sachets of sterile water to flush the peg tube to keep it clean. Nessa comes with me. I'm awkward while I get used to all this. I'm grateful and astonished that she's there. I wonder, could I have done the same thing so willingly at her age?
There was a whole process of having to look after it, where you had to flush it with sterile water and keep it clean and...
Nessa attaches the syringe to the mouth of the tube and injects the water straight to my stomach. I feel a rush of cold to the back of my throat. Afterwards, we have to redo the bandage around the wound. Raw as it is, Nessa doesn't even flinch when she sees it. A week ago, she'd have squirmed at the sight of a torn fingernail. April 24th. I am back in the hospital with Simon and our girls. In a small grey room, we have a family meeting with the Max Fax team. They tell us the extent of the tumour.
It's in my cheek and gums. Underneath my teeth. Lymph nodes. The surgical remedy. Removal of part or all of my lower jaw. The inside of my cheek. all lymph nodes in my neck. The after effects of all that. Disfigurement, facial nerve damage, partial deafness, paralysis, scars, the loss of my ability to smile. Bone from my body will be used to rebuild the inside of my mouth. Surgery must be followed by radiotherapy. I'll have to learn to talk, to swallow. The prognosis, according to conventional statistics, is fairly bleak. 40% survival rate at 5 years. I ask what I can do to prepare myself. You might want to think about your will, is the response.
All the things I've done wrong from the beginning tug at the sheets and crowd around the bed to wake me up. Why did I not pursue this more vigorously, sooner? Why did I not insist that someone pay attention? We stalk each other, the tumor and I, one eye on the clock. They let me out for the evening. We walk to Bullock Harbour, where the tide is low and the seals are lazy.
At that time, your tumour, what did it look like?
Really kind of angry and ugly. It was red and inflamed, and it had this kind of yellowy centre. It looked, I suppose, a bit like a boil that had erupted. Do you know what I mean? It was kind of pussy and red at the same time, and it was big.
Big crabs lie belly up in the tidal mud. On the pier, we find skeletons of fish, picked clean and scattered. There is a live crab in the patch of sandy water between pier and rock, pale and still, lethal.
So at that stage, I didn't realise how big. Because it was actually in my gums as well, so it was under my teeth.
Then I see a shattered crab shell, picked clean. Pearly, creamy white inside, muddy pink outside. No trace of the living creature left.
So when you saw it for the first time, what did you think?
There, that is the enemy. At that stage, I couldn't wait to get it out. I just wanted it to be outside of me. That's what I thought.
Now the lump in my neck is huge, hard like stone. I fear it's sliding under the chin and out toward the lips. I feel it under my top teeth as well. Stay away from my eye.
4th of May, 6 a.m. I sit on the bed with wet hair and wait. We won't know for sure if the operation will go ahead today until we can be guaranteed a bed in ICU afterwards. Simon is on his way to be with me. We wait together until they call me to theatre. 10 o'clock. Then I'm alone, with teams of blue and green gowned strangers. I put my life into their hands.
They cut a hole in my windpipe, put a tube in my throat. They attached the tube to a ventilator, split my lip and opened my face. Remove the tumour, scrape the crab from my cheek. They cut out my lower jaw, teeth still attached. Took a piece of my cheekbone, half of my salivary gland, all the lymph nodes on the right side of my neck, 2 drains in my upper chest. At the same time, a different team of surgeons opened my leg, removed half of my fibula bone, artfully placed it in the oral cavity with a titanium plate. Rebuilt my broken face. I was given 2 liters of blood. It took 14 hours.
I remember the first few days after the operation passed in a fog, panic and pain. My notebook became my lifeline. I couldn't speak. I had to write down every request, every anxiety. And I was always really precise. They'd say things like 6:43 a.m.
4:37 a.m. Everything is quiet. The lovely student nurse gives me a painkiller. I wonder where the tumor is now and in what condition. I wonder if it has left sleeper cells inside me, and if so, where?
I was so out of it that I would forget everything. You know, and I thought it was just important to know.
It was a way of trying to control things as well? Or?
It was just my way of holding on, you know. Sometimes my voice was so loud in my head that I was sure I must have spoken, but I hadn't. If no one was looking, I had to wave my arms or bang on the bed to get their attention. Then they waited while I wrote down what I wanted to say, like water or please open the window. Sometimes I thought, this is too hard, I can't do it. One night, two faces shone above me like moons, not letting me go. Simon and Dudu, my nurse for the night. I swam towards and away from them. I couldn't decide which way to go. I can't, this is too hard. But her eyes and Simon's voice held me to the surface. They fixed me in place and I stayed.
In that particular case, were you talking about, do you think you were nearest to death in that night? Or was it just despair?
It felt as if I was. It felt as if I could just let go.
May 11th. 1 week after the operation, I ask Nessa to buy me a mirror in the hospital pharmacy so that I can see my new face. She comes back with one of those pocket mirrors with a lid, the only one they had. Just as well. I take a quick look. Clock the staples, the stitches. A deep gouge where my cheek used to be. A massively swollen and distended chin. Like desperate Dan Albino, with stitches for bristles. Okay, I think. Okay, I've seen it now. I close the mirror and I put it away. Then I try to brush my hair. My fingers come across a wadge of something disgusting on the right side of my head. Revolting to touch. I prod it, wary. What is it? I ask Nessa. She has a look. Oh, Mama, she says. That's your ear.
It's ironic, but most of the obvious damage seemed to be the result of treatment rather than cancer. It would have been easy to forget how menacing the crab really was, but it was a fight to the literal death for one of us. This fucker emerged from the depths with me as its target. It moved stealthily and fast, rooted itself deep, spread as wide as it could. I was lucky to have found my way to people who were brave and brilliant and ruthless enough to root it out. And I was amazed. I'm still amazed when I think about the things they did. It's extraordinary. I mean, how do you ever get the nerve to wade inside somebody's face, you know, and start rearranging it, and to have the skill and the guts to do that and the imagination. Because every time they have to do something, it's always different. It's not as if it always presents in the same way or it's in the same place or... And they just do it.
Morning cocktails. Prune-coloured iron. White and citrus antibiotic, stick orange calpol, and cherry-coloured fizzy potassium. Texture white, green and yellow doses. Running passage of grains of light. Someone sighs in my ear. I wake up as a physiotherapist bustles in and find a message from Simon. I love you, in red ink on my hand.
This is the swampy thought under the topsoil where I stand. The words, extra capsular spread. What if the cancer has escaped into the wild? What if it's taking root somewhere else right now? Baby crabs and vengeful.
24th of May. It's our 26th wedding anniversary. 3 weeks since the operation. Altogether, I've been here exactly 6 weeks. I've discovered that I'd rather be awake than asleep. I rush towards wakefulness like someone underwater heading for the surface. My relationship with air has changed. I love it now. The first thing I do when I wake up is struggle across the room to open the window and feel it wash through me. It tells me I'm alive. They tell me that they found cancer cells in 11 of the 49 lymph nodes they removed.
I dream about wind, the colour blue. I wake to a cold wash of rain on the broken wing of the building opposite. Hold me, an old man shouts. Hold me, please. I can't listen to this, so I walk some more around the quiet upper corridors of the hospital. One day, shortly before my godfather died, I was adjusting pillows at his back when he groaned and leaned into my hands. I began to rub the grooves beside his spine, the wings of his shoulder blades. He closed his eyes and relaxed, more at peace than I had seen him for days. It made me think about lonely older people I have known, how touch-deprived they might be.
In the olden days, we used to...
1st of June.
Squamous cell carcinomas.
The team comes around to say that I can probably go home for good next week.
Most patients didn't
they want my wounds to finish healing away from the threat of MRSA. Sometime after that, later in the summer, when the wounds have healed, I'll have radiotherapy.
It means your tongue, your lips, your jawbones.
When I was going home, there was a moment when I stood in front of the nurse's station and didn't know what to do next. The nurses were smiling, but they had work to get back to. Simon was waiting. I knew what everyone expected of me, so I waved, turned my back on my empty room, took Simon's arm, and walked out of there.
Does that answer your questions?
Yes.
No other questions?
I don't think so.
That's not like you. Bye-bye.
Rationally, I knew that I should want to go home as well. I mean, the rational part of me wanted me to feel that too. But the other thing about it was that I had been there for 2 months, and those people were like family to me. I loved them. I was going to miss them, and I did miss them.
My daily regime. Exercises. Mouth, neck, shoulder, leg.
Flush tube.
Once per day. Diet. Soft food building to more normal regime. Dietary supplements.
Peg.
Clean and change once per day.
Neck dressing.
Outpatients three times a week.
Medication. Diphenine.
Oxynorm.
Pregabalin.
Antiplatelet agent.
Paracetamol.
Lignocaine patch.
Diazepam.
Amitriptyline.
Iron.
Laxatives.
Fentanyl patch.
August 8th. Today I step back onto the moving staircase of treatment. This time at St. Luke's. Before it starts, we make a chart of the weeks to come and stick it to the door of a kitchen cupboard. I'm to have 28 sessions of radiotherapy, given daily, Monday to Friday. 5.5 weeks. St. Luke's Hospital. In the mask room, the radiation therapists ask me to lie down on a narrow bed. A rectangle of yellow plastic mesh is softened in water and then pushed down gently onto my face. Their hands push and feather and sculpt the plastic to my immobilized face, neck, and upper chest. When it hardens, it is a perfect imprint of my new face and altered neck.
The silent masks watch from their shelves, each waiting their turn to be taken down and used. They are negatives of everyone who comes in here, impressions of damage and disfigurement. I imagine they come down at night and play among the monitors and leaves, mimic the warning beeps, dance into the dark.
In the treatment room at St. Luke's, shelves full of yellow masks, the imprints of faces I will come to know over the next few weeks, line the opposite wall. One of the radiation therapists lifts mine down from the shelf and holds it while we talk. I recognize the exaggerated hollow of the cheek.
While I'm enclosed in the shell, I listen to the sounds of the equipment as it moves around me. I hear a high-pitched whine and imagine lethal darts unleashed on a search-and-destroy mission amid a swarm of metallic killer bees. A friend sent me a good luck message this morning that said to imagine blue sky when I'm enclosed by the machines. But I prefer my deadly golden bees.
Last night I kept waking, frantic for water. In the afternoon, I feel better. Out in the garden, there are pigeons bouncing on our neighbour's cedar tree. They gorge on the fruit, swing on the branches. Then they fly up suddenly, 7 or 8 of them, and fly away. The beat of their wings is loud through the glass. They're fun to watch. There are moments when I realise that I'm happy. Just now, the past and the future, everything I want or regret, are all held back as by a sea wall.
In a dream, midges crystallize out of the air and become pointy-nosed bees in swarms that emerge under the doors, through the windows. We try to run away. When I wake up, I remember the bees are on my side.
20th of September. It's the last day of my treatment. Old hand, I open my eyes under the mask. The table moves. Then the beep. And the exposure, the high-pitched whine of the hornets unleashed to find any lurking microscopic particles of crab wherever they are hiding. I cheer them on for the last time. And then we drive home in the rain, under a black, black cloud, the remnants of Hurricane Gordon which is disrupting the Ryder Cup. How could they not have expected rain in Ireland?
People want courage in and from each other, and from books. Not politeness, not safety. Dream a future. Start now. In my mind, black wrought iron gates, cathedral-shaped, swing open to infinity. In my mouth, hot fizz and sea salt, burning acid saliva. The crab was nothing compared to this. I dream of writing and writing desks. Long driveways, high ceilings, rooms falling silent for a reading. The hills darken and rain falls and still we drive. Home again. The hot hand rests at my chin and wind sings high in my ears. Can I do this?
When your friends ask how you are and you say fine, they relate that to how you used to be. before you had cancer. But when I say fine, I mean something different. I think I mean today I don't have it. Today there's no sign of it. I should have known. You know, I really should have known. Everybody knows that if you have a sore that doesn't heal or if it changes and gets worse, that you should go to your GP. I had more reason to know that than most people do because of what happened to my sister. But I didn't know that applied to your mouth. I didn't think it applied to your mouth. And I wish I had known. I wish I had known more about cancer of the mouth because people just don't know about it.
29th of October. A month has passed and I'm feeling stronger. I'm adapting to the business of living with a new face, new body. Getting used to going out on my own. At first, I was afraid of how people would react when they saw me. Sometimes they stare. Of course they do. I would myself. But those stares don't feel hostile. More like curiosity, as in, did I really see that? It's Halloween weekend. Outside my house, prepubescent girls in bright miniskirts masquerade as fairies on the street. Their glittering faces set against winter, against the deeper dark that comes when the hour turns back, against the very idea of fire. The neighborhood kids come round to scare us with their costumes and their masks, and I scare them right back with my face. It's great to be home.
Nine months after the operation, I paid a visit to the pathology laboratory in St. James' Hospital, the place where they kept the slides of my tumour. The pathologist was warm and patient as she showed me how to use the microscope. Slides stained the colour of damsons, matching the jumper and scarf I was wearing. Strong colours, my armour for the day. Through the glass, a patterned world emerged. It was weirdly beautiful, intricate and contoured, like a topographical map in fetching shades of pink and purple. I saw nuclei and bubbly cell walls, tiny, dark, tadpole-shaped cells and ladder-like. A blurring of the tumour was.
And, yeah, that was it was really important to me. I think there was some part of me maybe that didn't quite believe it until I could see how close the tumour got to the bone.
It was getting ready to defend itself.
When they actually removed the bone, there was no sign of the cancer in it. But what I could see on the slides was that the bone was already changing.
Later, this would seem like the most important thing I saw. This reaction.
I was excited by what I'd seen. And not only because of the slides themselves, which I had really enjoyed looking at, but what they meant.
It proved something to me.
Because I was on the outside looking in. I was on the right side of that microscope looking at what was left of my tumour. And I was able to get up and walk away from it and leave it there.